flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
All right, our good friend Scott Anderson still can't shake his cough, and so hoping to have him back tomorrow. He is out sick again today. It is the Carson Anderson program here on 97.1 The Ticket. We got a lot of stuff to get to today, and there's a lot going on, and I think this Piston team is in a very fascinating point in this climb up the ladder, and I do want to discuss them. And if you're a Piston fan, you've been seeing it all along. If there are people that have just parachuted in lately, you're seeing, you're getting your first look at it. Red Wings got a big game tonight. Want to get into that a little bit later in the show. We've had some time now between the Lions loss to Washington to sort of digest and process. And there's some interesting reaction going on out there, and we'll get into that today. I do want to start the show talking about something, that hit sort of close to home-ish. I mean, my son, my oldest, is about to turn, he's about to turn 23. He is in Arlington, Virginia. It's his first job out of college. He searched for a place to live, found a place. One of the things about the place they live is it's on the 17th floor. And the apartment building he lives in, he talked about how they can sit on the balcony, and I've seen it. You can sit on the balcony and look at the monuments and watch the planes land at Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C. And he does it. He sits out there on his balcony and, whether he's eating dinner or just hanging out, enjoying the view. It's really cool to see all of that. And last night he texted us and said, quick turn on your TV. He wasn't out there and he wasn't watching live when the Black Hawk helicopter collided with the American Airlines plane, but he was seeing all the aftermath. He flies a lot, he has to fly a lot and, has a chance now, his first real job. He goes and visits friends and all that. And I think a lot of us put our faith in the airline industry. And I used to be really bad at it, to be honest with you, and I've gotten better. But my son also he's having shoulder surgery tomorrow. And my wife flies into Reagan today. A day later, as of now, they haven't reopened the airport. We're looking at alternatives in case they don't, but they're supposed to reopen it. But my wife flies into Reagan today. And, you know, her family has already experienced tragedy, as her Uncle Terry was on that Northwest flight that crashed at Metro back whatever year that was, 1988, I think of 1987, something like that. And she lost her uncle in that tragic plane crash. It was before we met. And look, I'm, you know, just like everybody else, in from a standpoint of, I mean, flying when you're up in the air, it's amazing to see our country and the planet from that point of view. It's incredible technology. You know, whenever I've had a chance to talk to pilots, all they do is basically reassure how illogical fears of flying are. But the extent of this tragedy, it is just, it's unthinkable what the people on that plane and maybe even that helicopter. And we don't know what happened with the helicopter, but it's unthinkable the lives it lost, but it's unthinkable what people had to go through and the terror involved. And it's unthinkable what the families are going through today. I've sincerely hurt when I saw this last night. And I think we all, you know, anybody who ever has to fly and fly regularly, I don't know if the thoughts ever cross your mind. I've gotten really, have gone from a person who was very fearful of flying to just getting used to it and having faith in it. And I remember a few years ago, Michigan was playing at Maryland and I had to fly in, and Michigan was supposed to play Maryland in a night game. And they moved it to noon because there was a hurricane that was moving into the area, and it had already started. The weather had turned, the winds were incredibly strong the day before. And we did a topic. I had to get on a plane at Metro and fly into, and I mean, I don't love turbulence. I don't know if anybody loves turbulence. And a pilot called up and said, you know, when you're driving down the road and you kind of hit a bumpy patch on the road and you just kind of bounce a little bit in the car. I said, yeah. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, that's what turbulence is. It's bumpy patches in our road. Do you freak out when you hit those bumpy patches on the road? And I said, well, no, unless it's a big pothole or whatever. But he goes, and if you hit a pothole, you usually keep driving, but you know, and so anyway, the point being, you know, that pilot reassured me on that day. I don't know how this happens. I don't know how this happens unintentionally. And obviously that's the question for when they, you know, stop the search and rescue, which they may have, and start to investigate this thing. How does it happen? How does somebody get so far off course that they end up in the flight path of a landing plane at a major airport? It just seems... it seems impossible. And at this point, you know, it's probably early to speculate on this, but man, just a tragic, tragic story. And I really feel awful today about it. So just wanted to open up and share that. We will move on and we will get to stuff that's going on in Detroit sports. We got the Blitz thingy today at 10:30. Scott Harris did speak yesterday and had some interesting things to say, as we'll get back to Detroit sports coming up on the Carson Anderson Program. Gator out sick again today, 97.1. Michigan Auto Law, auto accident attorneys. They care more, so you win more. Okay, so when we say they care more, what does that mean? Well, they take on fewer cases than other law firms. They take on fewer on purpose. This means they have more time for your case. And many people call Michigan Auto Law because they can't get a call back from the current law firm. Proactive communication is super important to them. Michigan Auto Law returns all phone calls within 24 hours. You will get a call back from them. They care more, you win more. Michigan Auto Law, auto accident attorneys. Visit autolaw.com. That's autolaw.com. All right, so here's what I think's going on. I think the NBA is picking on our Pistons. And I don't mean there's a conspiracy out to get them. I just think the Pistons are a team that is trying to break into the upper echelon, is trying to become a respected team in the NBA. And they're getting picked on, not because they're weak or not because people are out to get Detroit. They're getting picked on because teams can do it and they're trying to send a message. I think, you know, if you look at the success of the Pistons the last few years, they have been such a non-factor. The Pistons have been a team that was that auto dub. Everybody knew they got to show up and play. And now that team that was the auto dub is kicking up their heels a little bit and putting up a fight. They're getting picked on because they're not quite good enough yet to do something about it. And I'm not talking about, you know, starting to swing and throw punches and get in fights. I'm talking about teams can rile up the Pistons. Teams can push around the Pistons a little bit and still beat the Pistons. And they won't every time out, but I am hoping that we are looking at a team that is eventually going to grow up and make you pay for it. The last two times the Pistons and Pacers have played, there has been bad blood. That dribbling out of the ball, the end of the game back on January 16th, when Siakam and Turner got into it with Cade, and Beef Stew eventually came in after that. There was another player in there. It was Cade, and it might have been Tim Hardaway at the end of that game on January 16th. I mean, the Pacers were going to win the game. Everybody was just dribbling the ball out. It was the last 20 seconds of the game, and Pacers were dribbling it, talking smack. Cade was talking back. The game ended. The two teams kind of started going face-to-face. Beef Stew came in and pointed at Miles Turner and said, "You play with Legos." And I mean, it was, it was okay. This is interesting. I'm not sure it means anything. And last night it told me it means something. The Pacers are trying to keep the Pistons down. And it's not like the Pacers are way ahead of Detroit, but they're trying to keep the Pistons down. And the Pistons right now are trying their best to win these games, but they can't do anything about it. And there will come a day. Our day is not yet. But it feels like the Pistons have authentically continued to get better and better. And the Pacers are messing around trying to be a quality team and trying to, you know, they're not unaccustomed to being in the playoffs, although they've had a bad stretch here, but that's an organization that's been in the playoffs. And the Pistons have basically been established as the worst team in the NBA the last few years. This is, you know, remember this is what I'm saying. Remember this. I think the Pistons should remember it. I think the fans should remember it. I think this is okay. Got it. We know what you think of the Pistons now. We know how you feel about the Pistons. We know what you think you can do to the Pistons now. But those days are coming to an end. If everything goes as planned, Detroit's going to grow up and there might be some ruining. Pacers are better than the Pistons right now, okay? They got a better roster. But I think the Pistons, all you can do is file it away. I mean, when Beef Stew got thrown out of that game last night, and I don't really even want to, I mean, I wouldn't even make an argument that he didn't deserve to be thrown out. But when he got thrown out of that game for the highly aggressive box out of Thomas Bryant.
And he was just boxing out.
Yeah. He turned, faced him. And what did the official say? There was excessive intent with contact and follow through, or however he put it after they reviewed it. It was incredible wording.
He pulled out his dictionary and his book of words.
It was his book of words. It was straight out of the official's manual, like he was reading what a flagrant two foul, how they describe a flagrant two foul. I'm going to have to go back and look at it because I cracked up.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't say Section 3, Paragraph 4, you know.
Because he basically cited Section 3, Paragraph 4.
Yeah.
But I mean, okay, got it. Know what you think of the Detroit Pistons. Know you want to push the Pistons around. Just file it away, Pistons.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Was it, you know, excessive? Sure. And I think I heard the morning show talking about this as well. You don't want your players getting technicals all the time, getting thrown out of games frequently. That doesn't help your team on the court. But also, I think the Pistons are in a spot right now is, although their record shows, they're in that group with the Pacers, the Magic, right? In that, mm-hmm. right in that area. Their roster, talent-wise, from top to bottom, is not on the same level as the Pacers and the Magic. It just isn't. And so they have to fight and scrap and use grit to win these games. I mean, Cade Cunningham is a talented player, but he cannot do this all on his own, even though Malik Beasley's been a nice find this year. I think what they're showing right now is the chippiness with the teams lately. They're not the doormat anymore. You know, Kyle Kuzma tweeted out last year, I think it was, don't be that team in reference to the Pistons. You don't want to be that team that loses the Pistons. Well, you know what? They're done with that. They've moved on to the next step, which is we're competitive. We can win games now. We're fighting for a playoff spot. We're in the playoff spot. So I think when I see Stu getting riled up and getting aggressive, listen, I know there's definitely a time and place. And you don't want teams to be able to get under your skin. And, you know, because this is some form of mental weakness, as some people call it. But also, they're not going to get pushed around anymore. It's basically what they're saying. Enough is enough. I mean, you think we're not going to fight back? You're absolutely wrong. And I think maybe Beef Stew takes that too far at times. But overall, I think, you know, I think he's got good intentions there. And even after the game, he admitted, hey, I cannot let this continue to be a problem.
It's, here's the actual wording of the official. I found it. There was windup, impact, and follow through. The play was a non-basketball play. It's unnecessary and excessive. But okay, get your pound of flesh now. Get your pound of flesh now, because the way you do something about it is you beat that team. You beat that team. Okay, you're winning today, Indiana. You're winning today. Now, we can discuss whether or not there's a role for a $15 million basketball enforcer. Because, I mean, it doesn't feel like the game accepts that. The game allows for that the way it did in literally our two championship caliber teams. Our two championship caliber teams did it more this way than the three-point run-and-gun game that's played today. If you think about the going-to-work Pistons, were perfectly comfortable in a 68-65 NBA game. They would slow it down and muck it up. That's not really how the game is played today. That's how Detroit won a championship. The bad boy Pistons, Beef Stew is cut right out of that mold. There is no question that this is he's a bad boy, all right? He is what that team was. So the formula we have used has been, I mean, the bad boy Pistons could also score. I mean, it wasn't like they played a totally, and I put this in quotes, ugly brand of basketball, because Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars could shoot, and they could run up and down the floor, and they could score with the best of them. With Dantley and to Aguirre and all that. Then you get into the going to work Pistons played, again in quotes, an ugly brand of basketball. Can you win today if you adopt a formula that worked back then? Now, I don't even think the Pistons are necessarily trying to do that. They just have a player that does it. They have a player that does it. And, you know, is that player... I don't know if it's a necessity. I don't whether it's a necessity or not is maybe irrelevant. It's whether that player can be part of and that style mixed in at times can be part of a championship caliber team. I do want to get into this at great length, and we will talk to you. 248-539-9797. We open up the phone lines, but during the football season, Thursdays at 10:30, we do the blitz thingy, and that is next here on Carson Anderson on 97.1 The Ticket. Thought Karsh Gator out sick today. He's got a cough. And people are concerned. He's been texting us. He keeps saying, I think I'm going to be good tomorrow. And then he gets up and he can't shake the cough. And so he did say today when he sent a text in this morning, hey, hope to be in tomorrow. So we just want him to get better, but get it. Stuff's going around. Every Thursday throughout the NFL season, we swing around the league. We call it the Blitz thingy. Here we go. Playing the role of Gator today is Kang, our producer, who will also play the role of Kang, the producer.
Yeah, so Doug, since it's just me and you, I'm sorry, you're going to have to receive.
I accept.
All right, here we go. Question number one, who should Jason Kelce be rooting for in the Super Bowl?
Okay, so I have an impression of Jason Kelce. I think Jason Kelce is fully on board and is rooting for the party. That's my impression. I think he is rooting for the party. Look, I don't know how you don't root for your brother and your brother's team. His career is over, and it's your brother. But I also wonder if there's an undercurrent of not of, of FOMO, like if the Eagles win, he missed out. And there's also might be an undercurrent of his ego. So I retired and they could win it without me. So I think it's very easy for an athlete in this particular circumstance to root against his old team and root for his brother's team.
So on his podcast with his brother, Travis, he came out and said the most PC answer possible. And you can believe him, you cannot believe him, but he just said, listen, no matter who wins, he's going to be happy. Because one, obviously, if Travis wins, that's his brother, you know, who's his family. And the other, if the Eagles win, he feels like a lot of his former teammates are his quote-unquote brothers as well. And he still lives in Philly, and he, you know, loves the fans and the organization. But, dude, come on. This is a no-brainer. You root for your brother, who's actually your brother. Blood brother. All right? Unless you're Aaron Rodgers, you always root for your family, right?
Yeah. So. You know, let me ask you this, though, since we got more time, since Gator's not here. Professionally, can he say that and get accepted in Philadelphia?
Well, that's why I get it.
Right. So, I mean, I get that you said a PC. And PC, it feels like, you know, you're ripping on him a little bit. I don't know that he has a choice because I think those people would run him out of town.
Oh, and by those people, you mean Philly fans?
Philly fans, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Are they, you know, level-headed fans? No, not really. Yes, no. He still lives there. But also, I think on the inside, though, Doug, you kind of touched on it. If the Eagles do win it without him, there's got to be some kind of, like, was it me? And and they did it without me, and I don't get to celebrate. Like, he retired without one, right, with them. I mean, not with this current team I'm talking about. And so maybe, you know, that crosses your mind. But you got to root for your brother, Travis, man. Come on.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Should the NFL make the trade deadline week 17?
Okay.
Basically pushing it all the way back till the end of the season.
It would have been super convenient this year as the Lions kept having healthy players peeled off their defensive side of the roster. It would have been very nice if they had been able to make a few more moves. But I think it's kind of an overreaction. I mean, the one thing about the playoffs is that it's kind of your team. And if you can add guys right up to the end, that to me feels a little bit like cheating. Like, okay, we're right at the end. I think you'd have more roster manipulation where bad teams trying to tank send out useful players to good teams trying to win Super Bowls. And I don't like that element of it because I think they'd be exposed to that possibility. I think having the trade deadline well early enough that most teams still think they have a shot makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this seems radical, but I don't think it is that radical if you break it down. Like, of course it would have benefited the Lions this year, but I think teams will always try to do what's best for their own organization. So the tanking thing, it doesn't really fly with me because, yeah, you're worried about manipulation, right, helping other teams. But trust me, the Cardinals don't care about the Lions more than they care about themselves. Or the Bengals don't care more about, you know, the Rams than themselves. They're going to do what's best for their organization. Now, it might happen to help you and your playoff run, but they're looking for their future. If they need draft capital or whatever it is, or cap space, they're trying to get themselves into a better position. So I think pushing back the trade deadline, although it seems radical, I think it would actually be good for the NFL. Plus, could you imagine the trade deadline talk for just marketing purposes and sports radio and everything like that, continuing on, not just like, at, you know, earlier in the season where, I mean, Brad Holmes even said at the end of the presser, he's like, it kind of like is a lot earlier than you want it to be, especially if you're trying to make moves to better your team. And nowadays, Doug, everyone's holding on to the very end anyways. You know, like the Bengals wouldn't even think about trading Trey Hendrickson, but maybe they would in week 16 instead of, you know, week 12 or whatever it is, right? Or another team, because every team still wants to try to make it to the very possible end. I think they should really move it back. All right, Bill Belichick recently suggested that they rename the Lombardi Trophy the Brady Trophy. Should they actually do this?
All right, I don't want to overstate anything here. I was a Tom Brady fan when he was at Michigan because coaches told me he was the better quarterback, and the whole world at the time, fan base, thought that it was going to be handed to Drew Henson, who was incredibly talented and a hell of a quarterback himself. So I started defending Tom Brady. Well, what I came to understand was that Tom Brady heard about this, and Tom Brady, back then, appreciated it. But we weren't like friends, okay? So I liked Tom Brady a lot, and Tom Brady somewhat rewarded me by playing well, and it was good. but we're not like friends. But I like Tom Brady, okay? But what? This is too much. He doesn't mean that much to everyone. I mean, you do realize, do I want to call the Patrick Mahomes trophy if he keeps winning Super Bowls? No, people start to dislike you. He was incredible and is an amazing benchmark. And everybody doesn't have to, but you can kind of appreciate everything that he did. But you know what I think this is? I think this is about a devious way of Bill Belichick kind of roundabout honoring himself. You know how special that guy was? And then he says real quiet, and what we did together. And it reminds me of something that happened before. Tom Crean, when he was at Indiana, he was struggling to fit in there. There was a weird relationship with him and the fan base. I don't think the fans really liked him when he was the basketball coach. And he was a few years in, and he actually had a Big Ten championship team. And Indiana didn't put up Big Ten championship banners. They put up national champion banners. And Crean decided when they won the Big Ten, this team was so special and brought us back, we're going to put up a Big Ten championship banner. And he talked about the team. But what I really think he was doing was, don't forget, everyone, what I did. I did this here. And it did not feel genuine to me. And it didn't feel like it was, and this doesn't feel like it's about Tom Brady. It feels to me like it's about Bill Belichick.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Belichick went on to say, like, listen, this is a player's league, a player's game. A coach can only do so much, but he's always said, hey, I could never have done this without Brady, Vrabel, Brewski, Gronk, you know, all the guys that they had. And that's why he, you know, kind of jokingly put it out there. Maybe they should rename it to the Brady Trophy, because the players make this game. I mean, what did Lombardi mean to you, Doug? You know? And I think predictably everybody's going to say, first thought is no. So I thought, okay, no, let's just leave the Lombardi Trophy the Lombardi Trophy. But what about the MVP of the Super Bowl? Maybe they should change that to the Brady Trophy. Right now it's currently named for former Commissioner Pete Rozelle. Did you even know that?
No.
I think if you change it to the Tom Brady MVP award, people would know. And maybe this is recency bias, of course. We're currently living in this time right now where Tom Brady, you know, is very relevant. But I don't know. I think maybe it would suck for Pete Rozelle and his family, I guess. But if they change that award to the Brady Trophy, I think more people might be on board. So maybe, but something to honor Brady, I'm not against that. The man did win 7 Super Bowls. All right. Speaking of Super Bowls, Doug, should people start questioning if Josh Allen will ever win a Super Bowl?
I think this is so dumb, and I don't know why we do this. We do this all the time. We did it with, and I'm going to say something I hate saying because I have no way of knowing this, but I'm going to say it anyway. This is the same people. It's the thing I hate saying. This is the same people that said it about Peyton Manning or said it about John Elway, and I'm not sure why people like to do that when a player has failed in multiple summit ascents. Just say, hey, he can't get there. He can't get there. Must be something about him. Is it? Or is it just that the team he has isn't the best yet? And so I don't know why this blame assignment thing has become such a big part of sports analysis, and that people love to jump on board and just point a finger at one individual, and we do it over and over again. And I do not endorse this line of thinking.
Yeah, this is just the way it is, Doug. I mean, I think, should you start questioning if Josh Allen ever wins a Super Bowl? Yes, especially from those that criticize Lamar Jackson. It's the same thing. No excuses. Shouldn't we be saying, he's only good at the regular season. He's just a running quarterback. He's getting carried by his defense and everything else. The truth is, though, Doug, it is really hard to win a Super Bowl. So I think those people, I don't think he personally should be asked, questioned that much. But if you did criticize Lamar Jackson that way, you need to criticize Josh Allen the same way. All right, the Browns GM, Andrew Berry, just said that he won't trade Myles Garrett no matter what the trade offer is. Is that dumb to say publicly?
Well, yeah. I'll just say this. If I were a general manager, I would never say that. I would never say that, even if it's true. In fact, everything that came out of my mouth would be a manipulation to try and elicit trade offers. Honestly, I would be trying to elicit trade offers all the time through press conferences. And I'm not saying, hey, he's for sale, but I'd be finding subtle ways to try and invoke phone calls to get people to call me about my players just to see how dumb somebody is. See if Jerry went on a whiskey bender and is going to offer me 10 first round picks.
Well, yeah, you kind of just mentioned it. I mean, yeah, this was dumb to say. There's definitely a better way of saying it. You could say, hey, we plan on winning and Miles being a big part of it, right? And I find it hard to imagine Miles not being here for a long time, because part of your job as a GM is to make this team better, whether that's with Myles Garrett or without Myles Garrett. The ultimate goal is the Super Bowl. You still want people to call and inquire about it, like you just said. You never know if Jerry Jones misses one of his pills that day and he wants to call you up and offer, everything. Jim Irsay may get drunk, be like, hey, what's going on? Hey, would you like, all this, and you have to give us is Myles Garrett in return. So you never just completely shut the door like that publicly. Even if you want Myles Garrett to be there forever, a career Brown, you can't tell everybody that. And then, because what happens if you actually do have to trade him? You look like you're just a liar. And then Myles Garrett's like, what the hell, man? All right, Josh McDaniels is back for a third time as the Patriots offensive coordinator. How many times, Doug, can a regular person go back to a previous job?
I don't think there's a limit, and I think it takes a bit of humility and a lack. I mean, I'm not a particularly proud person. I have no problem with circling back to what worked before. If it's the old Peter principle, right? You get elevated to a position of failure, and then you go back to where you were previously. And in Josh McDaniels' case, it's worked. Now, I'm not saying it's going to work again, but I have no problem with going back. And then again, I'm not particularly proud. I think that keeps a lot of people that don't want to sheepishly go back to their old roles. But you were great at it. Go back to doing what you were great at.
All right. So, of course, it depends on how you left. And, they're willing to take you back. But honestly, I'm putting a number on it, Doug. 3. This is it. Josh McDaniels, you've hit your max limit for both sides here. This is getting embarrassing, man. Like, clearly they don't mind having him back, and he clearly, he's not too prideful to come back. But I think this is it, Doug. At this point, once you leave, I'm sorry, sir. Your card no longer works and will never work again.
There you go. That concludes the Wide 9 Omaha 4 Down Around the League Blitz thingy. All right, I want to get back to this Piston team and what happened last night in Indiana and what J.B. Bickerstaff said about it afterwards. You will hear that coming up today at 10:50 on Carson Anderson on 97.1 The Ticket. Doug Karsh, Gator out today, sick, 248-539-9797. Okay, so this Piston team is a fascinating team that is definitely looking to level up in the Eastern Conference, and they've done a really good job of going from completely irrelevant and just terrible to now basically being a 500 team with a chance to be better than that. This week has been sobering. We'll call it what it is. It's not been a good week. They lose to Cleveland and get somewhat taken apart by Cleveland. And then last night, I think Indiana not only, look, every time Detroit got close, I swear Indiana hit 3 consecutive threes, and then Detroit would battle back, and then Indiana would hit 3 consecutive threes, and whatever. Pacers win 113-119. 133-119. So the bad blood brewing with Detroit and Indiana, there's bad blood brewing with Detroit and Orlando, The Pistons and Pacers got into it back in the middle of the month, January 16th, in a game at LCA. And last night, Isaiah Stewart turned and very aggressively boxed out Thomas Bryant, and it was pretty flagrant. The official said there was wind-up impact and follow-through, which sounds like it's right out of the rule book. Said the play was a non-basketball play. It was unnecessary and excessive, which is kind of funny. But look, we've won two NBA championships in a certain way here in Detroit. We won two NBA championships in Detroit embracing physicality and defense. Now, the Bad Boys could run and gun and score with the best of them. Isaiah Thomas is one of the flashiest players in the league, but they had a persona and a physical way of playing. It feels like the league has gotten so far away with away from that. And here we have Isaiah Stewart, who's essentially a bad boy in a different era. And I'm just going to throw this out there. The same way the NFL has embraced the run game and brought back the run game. And, you know, if you're over the age of maybe 40, the NFL was a running backs league. It was Franco Harris and Tony Dorsett. And I remember Chuck Foreman with Minnesota, and we had Billy Sims, and this was a running backs league. Walter Payton. And that's an era that's long since been packed away. And it feels like it's coming back. It feels like it's coming back. We had the data in the middle of the season about, you know, six teams averaging over what was like 180 yards a game on the ground. And last year at the same time, it was one team. And that one team was Baltimore, and most of the running was the quarterback. And now you have, you know, more running backs and making big plays and getting more carries. The way that that's coming back, should the Pistons embrace what Isaiah Stewart does? Because he's more than just an enforcer, right? He does other things. He's a pretty damn good rim protector. He's a problem on the defensive end. And, you know, we brought up earlier in the week the trade deadline, and I mentioned Draymond Green. I said I'm against it. But getting Draymond Green would be a bad boys move. It would be a embracing the physicality of the game. And it would be going back to a formula that has worked here in Detroit, and that is a gritty, hard-nosed, defensive, physical style that wasn't without other talents, but they became known as that. The going-to-work Pistons became known as it. I mean, I always laugh because we'll go back and I'll do it again. The Tayshaun block, right? The Tayshaun Prince block that gets referenced all the time. I'm doing it right now to go find the video, because every time you see that video, it's coming at the end of an Eastern Conference playoff game. I believe it was the Eastern Conference championship game. Yeah, here it is. Indiana leads the series 1-0. It's the fourth quarter, and Detroit leads the game 69-67 with 30 seconds left. Okay? That was an old school style of game.
Not old stool.
Well, not old stool, although I guess it kind of applies. It was an old school basketball game, and the Pistons rode that to a championship. Now, look, they might have their superstar in Cade Cunningham, and they might have an enforcer and a player that is, you know, a defensive standout in Isaiah Stewart and others. But I guess, you know, we asked the question earlier, and I ask it again, can you win this way in the NBA? Would the NBA let you win this way if they embrace this stuff? Because right now, they're getting pushed around a little bit. They're getting picked on, and they can't do anything about it. But as their players get better, oh, they'll be able to do something about it.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Well, every time the Pistons have crashed the party, it's been with a different style. See, I mean, clearly the league isn't the same as it was 20 years ago. It wasn't the same as it was 30 years ago. But that doesn't mean the Pistons can't do it a different way as well. And they may not be the same way as the Golden Work Pistons or the Bad Boy Pistons, but when, like I said, when they crash the party,
yep,
they crash it their way. And so, yeah, I think when if the Pistons are able to do it, there's going to be some physicality to it. It's not going to be the same, but you talk about Draymond Green. He's old and busted right now, but Beef Stew, he could be the new version of their Draymond Green, and you're going to need a guy like that or two. And then you want to mention the skill and the flash and the scoring? Well, that's where Cade Cunningham comes in and whoever Trajan Langdon brings in to work alongside him. Maybe it's a Jaden Ivey, right, when he gets healthy. Maybe it's someone at the trade deadline this year. But the thing, or Asar Thompson, someone they already have on the team. But yes, they can do it their way again. You won't just be able to be as physical, but I think there's an element to that game that still can exist. What happened last night, you don't want your players getting technical fouls and ejected from games frequently. You know, you don't want the other team to see that they can get under your skin.
Yep.
But at that point in the game, it was over. And I think Beef had enough. And he was like, listen, you guys can't talk this crazy talk the entire game without us doing something about it. And that's what Bickerstaff and kind of said after the game.
Well, let's get to that because I promised we'd get to it. It was JB Bickerstaff after the game. Isaiah Stewart gets ejected in the second quarter. And, I mean, he was pissed. He pointed back at the Pacers bench, and I think is in a way of saying, I'm putting a pin in this moment, and I will remember this moment. And I absolutely loved as he was getting booed. He just held out his jersey. It said Detroit on the front because that's wearing your heart on your sleeve. But JB Bickerstaff, head coach after the game, said this. Okay, I mean, he is basically asking the media to go find out what was said in public, make it public. What the hell was said? What the hell was said? And was it said by, you know, the usual suspects, Miles Turner or Pascal Siakam, or was it said by the guy that Beef Stew went after in Thomas Bryant?
Now, there's an argument to be made that no matter what is said to you, you have to keep your emotions in check.
Without question.
And I get that to a point. But also, I think the refs, I think that Bickerstaff is also talking to the refs, Doug, saying, hey, man, it's kind of your guys' job as well to keep things under control. Like, otherwise, stuff like that's going to happen, you know? And you know how, like, they throw out those technicals or the warnings, the refs try to, hey, this game's getting chippy, it's getting out of control. I think maybe he's like, listen, you can't let them talk crazy like that because we're not going to stand for it as a team. I think Bryant flopped a little bit. Was it a flagrant? Sure. My man went flying, and all of a sudden, he felt a lot better and ready to fight when Beef Stew was already at the end of the court.
Dude, I mean, this has nothing to do with really anything. I just found it highly irritating. Here's a guy who's on his back, sprawled out, but the moment he gets surrounded, he wants to fight.
Hold me back. Yeah. Hold me back.
You waited till you could get held back to tell people to hold you back. Okay there, tough guy. I mean, it was a total eye roll at that point.
So, but what Beef Stew has to do is control his emotions and use it for a positive. And yeah, whatever they said, if they say it again, he can't react like that. He can't. But I think at this moment, I think where the Pistons are right now is they're still growing and still developing. And this is part of that process, you know? And I think the process is right now, we're not going to get pushed around. And eventually the next process is we're going to start beating you on the court.
Yeah. Yep.
And they have put up together more wins this year than they have ever before. So I think we're seeing progression. It's not all going to happen in one season. And the way other players play Beef Stew, because he's a big, strong guy, they box out kind of like the way he does, except that he doesn't flop. He kind of takes it. He takes on the contact, and they fight for position. You know, like they used to do in basketball, but nowadays it's a foul-hunting league. Everyone's looking for the foul shots. Everyone's looking to flop. Everyone's looking, oh, he hurt me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a different topic maybe in itself about ratings and viewership, but I think Beef does have to change his style of play, but I think it can be used to their advantage.
248-539-9797. Piston fans, do you want to see him go down this road again and develop this persona, this tough guy, physical persona that is really a Beef Stew at the point of that attack? Or is it old and busted? They shouldn't do it. And look, I bring it up because of the NFL embracing the run game. Things are cyclical. They come around. Might be a mistake, but I'm also fascinated. I mean, how people feel about Isaiah Stewart getting thrown out of this game for what was said. I don't, they can't be peeing away opportunities to win big games and having guys getting thrown out. And I kind of agree and disagree with JB Bickerstaff about, you know, at some point it crosses the line and it's no longer about basketball. I mean, the best trash talkers distract you. The best trash talkers get under your skin and make you get away from playing basketball. And that's what happened last night. It's Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket.